At the Commonwealth Policy Foundation, we try to approach the issues of life, marriage, religious liberty, and fiscal integrity from a biblical perspective that promotes thoughtfulness and kindness. We work with political leaders and concerned citizens from all across the state. To stay informed, visit commonwealthmatters.org and sign up for our e-newsletter. The Commonwealth Policy Foundation is a nonprofit organization that only exists because of friends like you. Thanks for tuning in to The Commonwealth Matters.
Welcome to The Commonwealth Matters. I'm Richard Nelson, Executive Director of the Commonwealth Policy Center. Just 4 weeks ago, Kansas voters went to the polls and they voted down an amendment to the state constitution that said that abortion is not a protected right under their state constitution. To the shock of many, it unfortunately failed. So the question is, why did it happen? And what can Kentucky do differently, since this is a similar issue, similar amendment is on our ballot this November the 8th. Joining us on the program today is Brittany Jones, and she is the Director of Policy Engagement for the Kansas Family Voice, and also very involved with the Value Them Both Coalition in Kansas. Brittany, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here today.
So, Brittany, you are the Director of Policy and Engagement for the Kansas Family Voice, and also you were, if I understand correctly, a spokesperson for the Value Them Both Coalition. As I just talked with you before we started the program, we're shocked that that did not pass. Kansas is a pro-life state. You have a Republican legislature, I believe a Republican governor, and it failed. So tell us, before you give us your assessment of that and what happened, tell us just very briefly what you do as a Director of Policy and Engagement for the Kansas Family Voice.
Yes, so Kansas Family Voice is a Christian pro-life, pro-family organization that works on a host of issues that matter to the family, and we do so from a biblical perspective. I personally am our attorney and our lobbyist, so I get the pleasure of working every day with the Kansas legislature and as well as other decision makers across our state. I also work in the campaign arena. And so this time of year, we're real busy trying to make endorsements and make election decisions for the general election that's coming up. But I also do a lot of speaking in churches, speaking with families, kind of educating and informing them on these ideas that are going on in culture and how do we talk about them? How do we train our families talk about them? How do we train the, how do we help the church talk about these issues? So I get the pleasure of not only engaging with legislators and policymakers, but engaging with everyday Kansans on a daily basis.
Yeah, it sounds a lot like what Commonwealth Policy Center does here in Kentucky. We are working closely with churches, speaking to the issues of the day from a biblical worldview, and we're also engaging politically. We've had a number of candidates running for the State House and State Senate in our office recently, where we were interviewing them and trying to determine who we'd endorse for the election. So I just want to take just a moment, and this is not the purpose of the program, but what do you say to churches that say, well, you're political and we're not political. We don't want to really be involved with what you're doing, or it's too, you know, even if we'd have you to come and speak on the issues, and if it wasn't about a candidate or a campaign, there seems to be, at least in Kentucky, there's concern, real, maybe fear is a better word, for the church to touch anything political. Do you face that in Kansas?
Absolutely. I mean, one of our main roles in the Value Them Both Coalition was trying to get the evangelical church engaged and getting them talking about the issue. And so we definitely, I don't think that is a uncommon discussion to have with churches. But what we learned, and I think something that actually worked really, really well in Kansas, was just we took time to get to know them. We let them get to know us. And something we say a lot, when they know your heart, they'll trust your voice. And so that's something that we really work on, developing those relationships of, hey, like I'm not here to endorse a candidate. I'm not here to push an agenda. I am here to promote biblical values. I'm here to talk about things from scripture. And I'd sit down with pastors before I spoke in churches and kind of run through, hey, these are things I'm going to talk about. I promise you, I'm committed to you, that I am not going to take this in some political direction. I'm going to talk about the issue because the issue is in the Bible. So we should be talking about it. And I really pushed pastors on that one. I did challenge them It's like, if it's in the Bible, you need to be talking about it. And I'm sorry, value them both is in the Bible. It's all over the place. Like, it's there. I did push them a little bit, but we really spent time getting to know them, spent time understanding what their specific concerns were and, you know, those dynamics in their church. And then we worked with them to figure out ways to kind of get around some of those objections. Like, you know, will you let us say it this way? Will you show this video? Can we help you do this? And partnered with them as opposed to just coming in with an agenda. And I think that worked really well, but 100% hear that objection all the time. But I really think value them both actually started bridging those relational divides and bridging that gap for a lot of pastors and a lot of churches in the state of Kansas. And that's why, to me, one of the best outcomes of value them both is to really see the church beginning to engage on these difficult issues, because people sitting in the pews, they want to know how to respond. They want to know what the biblical answer is, and their pastors need to be equipped to answer those things.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with you, Brittany. Did many of the churches let you come in and speak then, or show videos or promote your material that you had?
Yeah, the coalition spoke in more than 800 churches across the state of Kansas. Now, Kansas is, yeah, I think we have probably close to 1,500 Protestant evangelical churches in the state. And so we hit a pretty good number of those churches.
Tell us a little bit about the amendment. What did the amendment say? I don't know if you have the language in front of you, but it's very similar to what Kentucky's amendment says. Do you have that handy?
Yeah, so I can read the first sentence without even looking at it, but let me pull it up just so I don't say something wrong. So it said that because Kansans value both mothers and babies, the Kansas Constitution does not secure or protect a right to abortion, nor does it secure or protect a right to government funding of abortion. And then it goes on to say, to the extent permitted by the Constitution of the United States, the people through their elected state representatives and state senators may pass laws regarding abortion, including but not limited to laws that account for circumstances of pregnancy resulting from rape or incest or circumstances of necessity to save the life of the mother. And so that was our two sentence amendment. So just some background for people, this whole amendment process in Kansas started really in like 2017, but in 2019 is when we really actually began to form the language. We had a very radical ruling from our Kansas Supreme Court that created a right to abortion in the Kansas Constitution, and they protected this right at the highest degree. It essentially meant that nothing that the Kansas legislature can do essentially anything on the question of abortion. That pretty much every law that's passed will be presumed unconstitutional and can't be enforced. It will be almost immediately enjoined. And so that's really where all of this came from in Kansas. A lot of people think that, you know, what's going on in these states, even in Kentucky, that they started because of what the U.S. Supreme Court did. I'm pretty sure in Kentucky this is true, but definitely in Kansas, what we were doing in Kansas started long before anyone even knew the Supreme Court might take up a decision that could overturn Roe versus Wade. And so it's a long story in Kansas, but for Kansas, we were really just trying to protect our more than 25 pro-life laws that actually support moms and babies.
Brittany, did you find that after Roe v. Wade, which that's the context of this, Roe v. Wade was handed down June 24th, the amendment was voted on August 2nd. Was there a perception that Roe v. Wade somehow banned abortion? Did you find that people were confused in what Roe v. Wade did?
Yeah, people absolutely misunderstood what Roe versus Wade did. Unfortunately, one of the big things that we learned is that people's civic understanding is very, very limited. They don't understand what courts do. They don't understand what legislatures do. And so they really thought that the Supreme Court banned abortion. And then so somehow voting no on the value them both amendment was actually protecting the right to abortion and making sure that we had, you know, abortion in the state, because they really thought that there were people that legitimately thought that value them both banned abortion. And so it really quickly became a yes vote is a vote to ban abortion and a no vote is a vote not to ban abortion. That's what the argument in a lot of people's head became, when really it was a no vote protects unlimited, unregulated abortion, potentially up to the moment of birth, paid for with your tax dollars. That's what a no vote actually protects. And a yes vote actually would have protected 25 laws that actually do things like ensure that women have informed consent and parental notification, and at the very least, a clean clinic, a regulated clinic. Those are the things that a yes vote protected, but people could not hear that through all the noise because all they heard was that somehow this was going to ban abortion.
I had a chance to see some of the ads that the Vote No group had, and they, of course, they were funded by Planned Parenthood and NARAL and other outside abortion rights organizations. And one of the things that they said was that if you vote yes on this amendment, that it will take away rights from women. And it was predicated on a nugget of truth, I guess. When you look at that 2019 state Supreme Court ruling, they ruled that women, that abortion is a right, that it's a fundamental right. Now, you and I probably agree that that is not how laws are made. We don't do it through the judicial system. But practically, it is courts that do set public policy for us. So they were running, the opposition was running on this idea that if you vote yes, you're taking away women's rights. It was misleading and it was not true. But how many people would you say really bought into that?
I would say a solid 80% of those who voted no.
So was that the most compelling argument?
Absolutely the most compelling on their side. Because what it allowed people, all people were able to hear was that this potentially could ban abortion. This potentially, people believe the lie for the first time that this could ban IVF, that this could ban contraceptives, that this could ban, that we were going to force women to carry dead babies. Like literally the babies they had miscarried, we were going to force them to carry those babies and that we were going to not allow them to get the treatment that they desperately and medically need. People believed that. Those have always been like arguments that people have thrown out around the pro-life movement that never stuck. And for the first time, those arguments stuck. To be totally honest, when I was realizing that those arguments were sticking, I was completely floored because it's completely not true. If you look at Kansas statute, if you look at any of our laws, any pro-life laws across the country, none of them, not a single one of them would require a woman to not receive treatment that she needs. Like those are things that everyone agrees. A woman deserves treatment for a miscarriage. A woman deserves treatment for an ectopic pregnancy. Like those are all things we agree on. But for some reason, all of a sudden, because you don't have the backstop of Roe, people began to believe these lies and lies about what the pro-life movement was. And they could not hear our reasonable arguments. They didn't have space for them, unfortunately.
I did see some of their ads on their website, and they were very compelling, very misleading, as you point out. But they really essentially scared a lot of women about the ectopic pregnancies and about banning IVF and other things. It was very compelling. It was amazing that they could do it with a straight face. And apparently the falsehoods that they had promoted won the day. And of course, it helped that Roe v. Wade was handed down when it did. That seemed to be the impetus for the outrage. And they misused and I think scared people with what Roe was. People didn't know what Roe was, and they scared people to vote no because of Roe wasn't there as a backstop, if you will, as you mentioned. How many groups worked on Value Them Both? You mentioned that you had spoken about 800 evangelical churches across the state out of the about 1,500 that you had identified there. How many other organizations were involved with Value Them Both?
Yeah, so there were three main organizations. You had the Kansas Catholic Conference, the Kansans for Life, and then Kansas Family Voice were the major organizations that were leading the charge from day one, April 26, 2019, when all this began with our Kansas Supreme Court ruling. Those were the three that were really working on we've been walking the amendment all the way through the process, through the legislature and on the campaign trail. But of course, we had a lot of other partners that came in. Susan B. Anthony List was a huge help. Us on the ground, kind of getting this across the board. I mean, other groups that were also helpful, and especially in those last couple of weeks, a lot of different groups from a national perspective came in to help us get the message out. Unfortunately, we were 6 weeks after Dobbs, and you did not have time for people to feel comfortable. Whatever we were saying, you didn't have time for them to feel comfortable, unfortunately. And so that's. You had a great effort. We raised a whole lot of money. If you just look at the campaign finance report, it's pretty impressive. how much money we were actually able to raise to help with this effort. And so a lot of hard work was done by a lot of different individuals. We knocked between the coalition and other coalition partners and national partners, we knocked on more than 500,000 doors across the state. Mm-hmm. This is an effort like we haven't seen in Kansas before. Huge grassroots effort, huge fundraising effort by so many different people. And I don't want any of those people's efforts to go unnoticed or unappreciated. We just got overwhelmed by the Dobbs decision, a populace that just wasn't ready to deal with the tough issue of what actually is reality. Unfortunately, people just are living in a lot of fear.
Thank you. If you're just joining us, you're listening to The Commonwealth Matters. I'm Richard Nelson with CPC, talking with Brittany Jones of the Value Them Both Coalition in Kansas. And of course, Kansas voters voted down that constitutional amendment that would have prevented taxpayer funding of abortion and would have said simply in their state constitution that abortion was not a protected constitutional right. And this is important to Kentuckians because we have a similar amendment on the ballot this November the 8th. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back in just a moment.
Hi, Richard Nelson here with the Commonwealth Policy Center. It's clear that the news media isn't always fair. In fact, there's lots of far-left bias and political gamesmanship. No surprise there. So if you're looking for a perspective that's grounded in the truth of Scripture and our nation's founding principles, then get plugged into CPC's resources. Sign up for our e-newsletter at commonwealthpolicycenter.org. You can also follow us on Facebook at Commonwealth Policy Center. And we're on Twitter at CPC4Kentucky.
Welcome back to the Commonwealth Matters. I'm Richard Nelson here with Brittany Jones of the Value Them Both Coalition in Kansas. And Brittany, just before the break, you were talking about your grassroots effort to educate Kansans about the constitutional amendment on abortion. And you really did a lot of work. You knocked on 500,000 doors. You raised a whole lot of money. You spoke to a lot of churches. And yet you were outvoted. It was about a 60% margin that voted down that constitutional amendment. I want to talk about the outside groups for a moment. My understanding, according to the latest financials, is that they raised somewhere close to $13 million, the pro-abortion groups. Is that correct?
Yeah, so they raised about $13 million, and then we raised about $9.5 million.
Okay, so a whole lot of money was spent on that. Where did their money come from? Are you aware of who supported the vote no?
People you would expect. NARAL, Pro-Choice America, you had Planned Parenthood, you had the ACLU, all of these different, groups that you would kind of your normal suspects. But then when you dug down into who was actually donating, you had people like Michael Bloomberg, Spielberg, if you look through their the campaign finance reports, you have people on Fifth Avenue and people in Los Angeles. 70% of their donations came from out of state. 70%. A half of a percent of our donations came from out of state. Our coalition was really funded by Kansans. Our people going door to door were Kansans. Our money was coming from Kansans. Theirs was largely coming from out of state. They had people from all national politicians were actually fundraising for them. It really just blew me away by the amount of out-of-state money and out-of-state individuals that all of a sudden had an opinion on the Kansas Constitution.
Okay, that's amazing. And I think that's a story in itself of this being an issue of national concern. I think the other side saw this as an attempt or an opportunity, really, of stopping constitutional amendments that would just really stop state-level judicial activism. That's what we're talking about, right?
Balance of power issue. It's not even about abortion. It's about who should be making the decision.
Right. And I think, so to your point earlier about our civics in this country, civic education is lacking. Most people don't understand the difference between the judicial and legislative branches and who really should be making the law. But according to our state governments and federal governments, it is legislators who make the law. The courts actually When there's a challenge to the law, they consider the facts and they apply the law to the facts. They do not create policy for us. And that's something that has been turned on its head since we've had an activist U.S. Supreme Court for probably 75 years or so. But the idea, though, that people should have some say in the law and that legislators should make the law instead of courts, that's something that's important to all of us. So what is the status, by the way, of the... I mean, you've got 25 pro-life laws in Kansas. Are those all struck down, or what is the status of those laws?
Yeah, so every one of them is presumed unconstitutional. There have been at least three that have already been struck down. So that was our live discernment abortion ban, and that was the law that was at issue in the case in 2019. Our clinic licensing law, so there are no statewide regulations on abortion clinics in Kansas right now. And then some of the regulations around our telemedicine laws have also been struck down. They are already litigating our requirement that a doctor be in the room when an abortion is being performed. They are saying that they are so overwhelmed that they can no longer provide a doctor and put a doctor in every room when an abortion is being performed. We kept saying Kansas is an abortion destination. It's going to become even more of an abortion destination. Yeah, and they would, and you know, every reporter would say, well, where are you getting that from? I'm like, they're literally saying it. They're saying they're so overwhelmed by women coming from other states to get abortions that they can't follow our laws anymore. Like, how much more evidence do you need? But they're like, well, that's not true. The media, unfortunately, completely ignored what was really going on. They intentionally, I would say, ignored the evidence that was right in front of them. And they refuse to tell our story. They refuse to tell our side of the story. I would do these 45-minute long interviews where I would talk about every issue under the sun and every angle to this. And I would talk about some of these things that are happening. And they would literally just pull a 15-second clip where I said, this is not a ban. That's all they would pull. That's all they would talk about. And unfortunately, people didn't hear the real story. And they weren't able to really hear what's going on. So we have those three that have been struck down. We're expecting them to challenge more and more of them in the coming years. Of course, taking a law through the court process is a long process. It can take years. We don't know how quickly these will get struck down, but we're expecting over the next decade that the majority of them, if not all of them, will be struck down. And until that time, we can't enforce them. No one is going to try to enforce a law that everyone knows is presumed unconstitutional. And that is bad news for Kansas women. That is bad news for Kansas babies. And that's really bad news for Kansas families.
Brittany, have you talked to legislators as to what the next step will be when they convene in session, whenever that will be? Is there any discussion of what legislation or maybe another attempt for a constitutional amendment? I know it's early and you're probably all still licking your wounds in that defeat, but or maybe things are, is it such a chilling effect that nothing is going to be done? What's going on there with that?
Yeah, so we go back into session in January. We're January to May, sometimes June, legislature. So we're part-time legislature. We're having lots of different discussions about, you know, kind of what is practical. Everyone has a slightly different opinion on how best to respond. I can tell you the pro-life movement does not go down without a fight. Like, we do know how to do the long and slow battle of, and you know, fighting for moms and babies in small ways. We're here for the long haul. We're not going anywhere. And so we are definitely having those discussions about exactly what that will look like. We're working on strengthening support for pregnancy resource centers. I do know, even on a, you know, more granular level, there's attorneys that are forming to try to help some of these pregnancy resource centers better meet the needs of women in crisis pregnancies. We're working on a lot of different angles, but the legislature will primarily be looking at, you know, ways we can chip away at this, ways that we can ask the court to reconsider what they've done, and just lots of different angles. I mean, I don't foresee another constitutional amendment like this coming up anytime in the near future. It's definitely not something that there's any political will at this moment to take up again. But of course, the Lord knows how to work in interesting ways. And so I'm not going to rule anything out at this point of what exactly will happen, but we're having a lot of different discussions. And, you know, I tell people I may be old and gray, but we will get this right. I don't believe we're going to, the people of Kansas will allow their constitution once they really understand what's going on, once they really see how difficult this is, once they see the strain this has on Kansas, once they see the strain this has on women and on our culture, I believe Kansans will react and they will fix this problem.
One thing that is clear, Brittany, is that this was a wake-up call to Kentucky and to other states that are considering similar amendments on the ballot. We're in shock here in the Commonwealth. We expected it to pass. We didn't expect the margin to be as wide as it was, 60-40 margin to vote it down. We have for Kentucky voters. I mean, we're expecting a similar misinformation campaign. We're expecting similar scare tactics. What would you say to the Kentucky voter listening in right now?
Yeah, I think the one thing I've told both Kentucky and people in Pennsylvania is people will have more time to see that the sky didn't fall after Dobbs. They will have more time to see that Dobbs wasn't a ban. So I do think some of that believability for the other side's lie will have toned down a little bit. So I would encourage you with that. But what I would challenge every Kentuckian who's listening today, get educated, get informed about what's going on. Make sure you can respond to those arguments about miscarriages and ectopic pregnancies and IVF. Make sure you can respond to those individual lies. Be talking to your pastor and your community leaders now. Make sure that they understand what this is and that they will be ready to engage people well on that question, on those questions, because I truly believe the pro-life movement has answers for all of those questions. We believe in life. We believe in moms. We believe in babies. We believe in empowering families. And so we have answers to every single one of those questions. We just need to be prepared to answer them. And so start engaging your friends and family now. Start those conversations because you are going to be the most believable voice to those people. Richard and I can talk all day, but you are the one that they're going to believe. They're the one that you're in their life every day. They're going to trust you. So make sure you have the answers. Now, don't leave it to one of us to try to persuade them. It's up to you to talk to the people in your life. And so I would encourage every Kentuckian to make sure that they're informed early, make sure they know how to talk about it, and make sure that they are engaging people in their lives.